And then the whole confusion about who had it, where did they have it, and how is Bob going to bring it forth, and the people aren't with him, and doesn't matter anyways. A lot of dimensions in that. I hope you enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Any comments on it?
It's interesting. You said it. You called it a battery, and I incorrect. You said it's a cold fusion reactor.
Yeah, a reactor, like the nuclear reactor. I never heard him. I always called it a battery after that, and he once corrected me again, but he never said reactor, as far as I know, unless I can't remember. But that's the first time I ever heard it being called a reactor.
Yes.
On the replay.
That was the first time for me also. Yes.
Well, that's good, eh, Carol? A reactor. Sounds impressive. And then that whole skit about, you know, they deliver it, and I'm there, what the fuck we do with this? Don't hurt anybody? We plug it in? That's pretty funny. Do you bet? You see, this, you got to get the humor of this, this huge play, where, you know, if Edison had a medium, and he released all his recordings with his medium, and the medium was saying, Edison invents the telephone. What do we do with this, Billy? Do we plug it in? Do whatever? I mean, what inventor has had themselves satirized before the technology shows up? See? It's very unique. The whole world laughs about me for a couple of years before this thing happens.
Well, and he also made a spoof on you inventing DNA. Stir this concoction.
See, I hadn't thought of it that way. You're right. That's what we did. We invented a new kind of DNA by affecting it with the RNA drops. Right, Carol? Wow. There he was planting that shit in there. Fucking clever guy, eh?
And he said he decided to, you know, he's making out as you, or pretending to be you, and or describing what you did, and he decided to stir this concoction up that was already there. He was making that a point. It's already there. You didn't create it, but now Bob invented DNA.
Listening, that made me think of what Bob said. You don't want to be me. It's like that was the beginning of Bob being the canary in the mine. With Ion, I am putting everything on Bob.
See, this is way more equally ironic as much as Shakespeare or anybody else that was good at irony. There's incredible irony going on here. Ion is making fun of the world or of me with the truth that's coming. Incredible. And that's the way he tells a story. If he's going to tell a story and there's no time, he has to cover all the false premises of past, present, future. You notice he said, I said, you're from the future. He's, no, we're past. We're from the past. So look at that, Carol. Ion's from the past. There's no past, but within the false premise, Ion was something that people had access to, you know, 10,000 years ago, maybe. It was a phenomenon before the Delphi people.
Ion said they're waiting on Edgar Cayce to give them the update. This was, you asked if anyone had harnessed cold fusion today. And Ion said, oh, they're waiting on Edgar Cayce to give them the update. And then you say, oh, in the future, Ion. And then Ion says, or in the past, Ion.
Oh, that's how it said, or in the past, right. And, what's the thought there? People are waiting for Edgar Cayce. Oh, yeah, Cosmic Awareness said that awareness is the same thing that came through, that comes from Worcester, the same thing went through Edgar Cayce. So Ion is equal to Cayce in a way. So they're waiting for the world to say it. If you remove it one step from Edgar Cayce, even though Ion says Edgar Cayce is not what Ion is. But anyway, he's taking the way I know it through Cosmic Awareness. Ion can be linked in with that thread that the Buddha and the Christ and Worcester were performing Ion or Cosmic Awareness or non-physical.
Pretty witty also when they said that they're a terrestrial being that is extra. Ion is a terrestrial being that is extra.
Extra.
Right. And newbies will get all confused. When I was asking when J.W. is telling a story about J.W. and his son, every now and then Ayn goes, and I said this. And we go, what?
Yes.
Ayn just said, there's J.W. Oh, my God, that's J.W. Now, I think Ayn gets a little mixed up or something. Or Ayn feels that they are J.W. when they're inside him.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm just giving a heads up that I noticed that. So,
yeah,
hold your peace. What, Bert?
I noticed that also. But
yeah.
That's probably the bleed-through between J.W. and Ayn.
Yeah, because he would say J.W. and then he'd say Ayn was J.W. And then he'd say J.W., talk about J.W. did this, and then he'd say I did this. And back and forth a couple of times. Which is probably meant to be, to show how Ayn merges with the physical. Could have been totally conscious the way he did that. Planned or in effect.
Yeah.
Now, Bernadette, you asked a question of Carolyn, and we answered it. Did she come back? I don't think she came back. 228. A lot of people commenting on things, but I didn't get a chance to look at all of it. So what's next of the notes before we continue? What do you got there?
It was interesting what they were talking about, the chip body didn't get invented.
Right. But then he blurred it. He said it's energy or it's, it's there in matter. But we have to evoke it.
Yeah. Then he summarized it for me. He said that electricity was not invented. It was just an invention to harness it.
Yeah.
He said that, Also, you found out that Walter Winchell
right.
was another person in three like you.
And he'd manifest everything. He'd think up a story and then it would show up. That's pretty good. And he was on the radio like me, so. Another interesting way to look at, Ayn gives you different ways to look at historical stories.
Yes.
Historical personalities. Now the next thing was, I have to look at my inventory here.
Yeah. Wait a minute, Bob. I was looking for that chip body reference. Chip body was already here. There was just a new fundamental way of usage, he said.
Yeah.
Now, that's
a
little bit...
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's a little harder to conceive of that the chip body was already here.
But there was a fundamental usage?
There was a new fundamental way of usage. I'm echoing.
Uh-oh, you're echoing.
Why am I echoing?
Maybe because of other people, or you're causing.
Yeah, I don't think I am anymore. Never mind.
Okay.
I don't hear it.
Right,
just for a moment.
What do you think of, what, Bert?
Just for a moment, she echoed. It just came in and went out.
It went away.
Okay, so you heard me talking about Professor Rubini, who turned out to be sort of manipulated by the 418 group. That's never been talked about, what the 418 group manipulated. That's, I don't think, too much talked about. So I hope you enjoyed that.
That was early on, yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
2009 topic. That's what's interesting is how many topics we've covered in the archives over the years, and they started way back in the first 6 months that you were talking to Ayn.
In terms of variety of topics.
Yeah, and topics that became very significant over that course of years, and they were hinted at.
And then the amazing insight, Carolyn, you may not have noticed this, but the more you start seeing the Grand Malaya clock as ridiculous and the different faces of the four-face tower being off, all four of them, the better it is, because that's a closer approximation of what time is. It's a discontinuous non-time. So you didn't hear that at the time, did you, Carol? Didn't get that. And so, what? And not before, you're right. And then, you know, we have uniformity of time. You guys all look at the clock and see it's the same time as everybody else. Ah, you're quite low on the totem pole when you're doing that. You're going along with the unified false premise of time. You're actually seeing it.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, guys?
Wow.
As it was getting mutated by ion, I started to notice the clock and the tower changing. That was me loosening up.
Yep, the more anomalies, the closer you are you're getting to you.
Yeah.
And then you said, once I get wackier, I'll get closer to the authentic me. The wackier I get, the closer I'll be to my authentic self.
Hmm.
Bob? Did you?
What?
Oh, that wasn't funny? You're not.
Okay. Okay, do it again.
Okay, you guys were talking about the clock and that the faces were different timing and you were noticing different things, and Ion was saying, you know, the more you notice the anomalies, I use the word anomalies,
the more authentic I'm getting.
Yeah, the closer, the degree of separation is less amplified.
Yeah,
and then you said, then you said, yeah, once I get wackier, I'll get closer to the authentic me. The wackier I get.
Oh, you're personalizing it a bit. I'm talking about myself. As I get crazier and scare you people, just know I'm ascending and you're not.
Well, I can relate to it. I think Bert can relate to it. Once we get, the wackier we are, the closer we are to our authentic selves.
Okay, so if you guys start perceiving me wacky and I didn't even notice it, there's something weird. You guys get wacky.
Okay, there we go. That explains this weird phenomenon that you're not laughing right now. You're pondering it seriously.
Yeah. That's a good insight. Nobody lives as if they want the clocks to be all different. Shows you how hypnotized we are by visual space, the clock face itself.
Yeah, but you just brought something that I experienced. I mean, I mentioned that when I'm at work and I'm experiencing on the chip body that I'm experiencing anomalies, and what you just brought up about that time just made me reflect on something I've seen almost every day for the last 4 months. Because I asked Ian about, we use this virtual interface where our whole system interface is in a virtual cloud-like environment, but I have to use a PC. So when I use the PC to log in, I have a certain time, but when I go into this virtual space, it's a different time. And when I first logged in, the first time we ever used this, my PC match the same time as this virtual space, but as the more that I'm engaging this virtual space, the time is different now. And when you said about those anomalies, because I always noticed it, at first it was like 2 minutes difference, but now I think it was as of Friday, it's like a 5 minute difference when I log in and log out. Because when I log out, I look at the clock and it's 5 minutes faster than this virtual space. And I'm like, But the chip body, what Ion says is something that's far out, but that whole merger of our engagement in the chip body, I'm getting, not to talk more about myself personally, but I'm getting glimpses of that, and that's pretty wild and weird.
You're getting glimpses of what?
The merger of the chip body and my engagement in everyday life, because the chip body is more and more becoming a part of all of our lives, because it's something that's there. And with Ion around overlapping all of that, I'm just getting little bits and pieces to seeing that.
What do you mean by glimpses or bits and pieces?
How is it getting into your life more?
Just anomalies. I mean, just for instance, on Friday, I felt really weird, but I did some work in a spreadsheet, and I know that I saved it. And because, you know, it's like the work now in finance is like virtual multitasking. So I'm multitasking, did something, went away from it, but then I got another reminder that I had to go back into the spreadsheet. And when I went into the spreadsheet, everything I did was not there as if I didn't do it. And I know that I did it. I know that I did it. So there's little weird things like that.
So it's being saved in this virtual environment, quote, saved.
Right. I know that I did it. But when I go back, it wasn't. There was like two instances, two different tasks that I did on Friday that I know that I did it, went back, and it wasn't there. And I'm like, okay, that's weird, but I just have to get it done. So I went ahead and did it again. So that timing, that whole thing of realizing that there's no time is really a mind perspective change. And to hear Ion speak of that earlier, it's something that's always rotating in my mind.
Bert, you're making me think of when Ion was explaining that if Bob's eyes were closer to the ground, things would be faster. And so, things would be happening or moving faster the closer we are to the ground. And your virtual reality thing was slower, a few minutes. You're noticing that it's a few minutes slower than your own PC, the timestamps?
Right. The same PC that I'm using when I go into the virtual environment is 5 minutes slower in the virtual environment versus the PC.
Well, maybe you got to slow down. You're making the changes too fast. It's not registering.
I'm not even.
When you go back in,
I'm not even going to put my mind on that. I'm not even going to try to put my mind on that. But I'm used to it now. But at first, it was kind of like, what is that? But then there was some other things that I spoke with Ian about last year regarding the time sequence of documents that I saved, and it's really strange, but anyway, I'm used to it, so I don't really put a lot of mind work into it.
Well, do you ever have the sense that, like, suddenly, just in a moment, how do I describe this? I'm just walking around, I'm in the barn or in the house, and then suddenly I turn, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I live here, or oh, this is where I am now. Does anybody else have that experience? Some days it happens like, multiple times during the day. Where I'll just turn and then boom, like, where am I? Oh, that's right, I live here. It's the strangest sensation.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
You're agreeing, Bert?
Yes.
Yes. All right.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
I actually asked Ion that in a code way. A while ago, because I experienced that a few times when I'm riding the bus to work. That when I'm riding the bus, I have an anticipation that the bus is somewhere longer on the route that it takes every day. And then I look up and it's like I'm maybe like two bus stops away from where I got on the bus. And I'm thinking I'm like almost in Zurich.
So you have the sense that you're going faster than the bus is going.
Exactly.
Mm. Mm. It's a timing thing. That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. It made me wonder if the more we have a sense of, I don't know, our discarded bodies, our bodies outside of our chemical body, our existence outside of our chemical body, that we surprise ourselves by being in it?
I look at it a little differently because, like, when I read, you think of, like, a number of things after you get off the show because there's so many subjects.
Yes.
But when I read that article about the Silicon Valley guys taking LSD, it made me to work better. They said they use microdoses to work more efficiently. But I find now that, I'm able to work on a whole different level that's almost not human with the work that I do now.
Example,
and it's definitely credit to the RNA drops, the whole complete performance. But I would put it to the RNA drops from the science that Ian's laid out to Carolyn and Bob with the ISO, we have no idea what that is, but I'm able to multitask on a totally different level. And I noticed that because the guys that I work around are younger than me, mm-hmm. but my stamina of getting shit done multitask-wise mm-hmm. They can't hold my shoes. They can't hold my shoes.
So they're noticing, you notice that it's the quantity of the work you can produce, or quantity and quality, or is it?
Both.
Uh-huh.
Both.
That's cool.
But it's the RNA drops, for sure.
Sure. Then the more you're relaxing, the more you relax, the more productive you become.
Yeah.
Or is it a new kind of productive, a new fundamental way of usage?
I can't use words to describe it. I it's not really good to use words to describe it. It's a feeling. But a lot of this helps with talking to Bob. That's why I always say that Bob's perspective, if you're listening to these tapes of, Bob may make teases of himself that he doesn't know anything, but he knows a lot. He's able to cover a lot of history, but to actually not know something actually opens up the space to know a lot. And Bob is an example of that. And that's why I'm find myself slipping into, because I don't really care, but then I know. That's why I said I didn't want to use words for what I'm doing work, because I really don't care like I used to, and I'm able to get more done.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. Here.
Yeah.
It's relaxing in action. And you're noticing. That's beautiful.
There's something that Ian ended with that coincides with something Bob said in the Zappy, because I went back and listened to Get Zappy or Get Out because of something else I was looking for. But Ian said in a clip that technology is moving so fast, and in that Get Zappy, Bob said something. There's another thing. I always say blow my mind. Bob said I need to change that, but I look at it as like a it's a constantly changing perspective every time you listen to it. It just opens up your perspective every time you listen to all these different subjects, because your perspective just opens up wider, wider, wider. But Ion said that technology is moving faster, but in the Get Zappy, Bob said something that was like, the guys talk too much at work, so I'm not able to go back now and make really fine detailed notes when I'm listening. But Bob said that all technology is obsolete, and he gave an explanation to it, and I was like, wow. Bob, do you remember that?
In the Zappy video, that was the
Get Zappy tape with Roxanne, the last
that was the love video. That's where Bob explains love for the one and only time.
Right. Yeah, I should bring it up and play it.
No, it's a good one.
I listened to it twice because I was looking back on Bob posted something on the Quadrivium, and Bob said some profound things we can talk later.
Oh, yeah, we got to do that. Yeah. I know what you're talking
Quadrivium.
About. The post.
Right.
Yes.
That's what made me go back and listen. But then Bob, re-listening to it, I heard Bob say, all technology is obsolete. And then he gave an explanation. And when he gave an explanation, I saw it, and I was like, that's a whole different perspective there.
You remember it, Bob?
I don't remember exact words, but that's one of my greatest tapes. I took the one human mystery, love, and made it very mundane and obvious, and we don't even need to talk about it. And because there was a chip body love, a new kind of love lurking about that no one was dealing with. Yeah, let me just see. I can bring it up and play the last 5 minutes or so, you say? Let's see. Was I doing something with the content of something?
Oh, it weaves all over the place.
I was able to take, let me see, what is it? Okay, you said, the balance in our life today is the battle with different technology. All technologies are obsolete. once you build this digital membrane that we're all in, we live in a really fused paradise.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yes, I remember that part.
I might have been in trance. I don't even know what I meant.
It was, it was like the technology is competing for our attention or something as they,
yeah.
you know, they get bigger and bigger and bigger as they become, as they obsolete themselves. What?
But those insights changed my whole perspective. I mean, it's just like, I mean, it's really wonderful to.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were we just doing 5 minutes ago?
You're looking for the Zappy.
You guys got talking. And what were
you
talking
about? Damn.
Bert described.
Oh, you're talking about the recording.
I asked, yeah, and Bert described something. I asked him what he meant. You and I asked him to be more concrete about the glimpses he was having in the chip body, about the chip body.
Right.
Time, yeah, the time difference.
So how did he do?
Great.
He explained himself?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, to the extent where he didn't want to use any more words or use words, and he, but he used some for me, for everyone.
Right. So, scanning down here for the quadrophenia thing, there it is. So I've got to bring up the apparatus. Bring up system preferences.
Where's your cheat sheet?
Right. Down flower. Volume has to be up. Skype is ready to go. Let's see if this works.
Headphones are last.
I just led the country through the... Right. So I'm going to go... Oh, was this the This is the... Oh, no, no. I'm looked up quadrophenia. I'm going to go to the love
Zappy.
Thing.
Get zappy.
Yeah,
get zappy.
They got to go. All right, so that would be the fastest would be to go to Vimeo, but then I have to go find a number. So, okay. Still looking here.
Here, Bob.
What? Well, you found it?
It's on chat.
Oh, you posted it. Okay.
Rob says Drivium.
I saw that. I wasn't going to dignify it with comment on it. Okay, with 12
my
minutes
point
left.
Is I'll pay attention to the person that enters my reality. Paying attention.
Oh, yeah, the whole paying attention thing. So going a little further along.
You know, artists always take the old cliches from the museum, and they repaint the old paintings with new ideas. So within the art craft, that's an example of turning something into an art form. Now, part of that enterprise is grammar, which is searching for origins of meanings, of words, of gestures. So when one starts to look at this boring old technology, you start to say, what's this like? You start to think about where to come from, and you start searching its form. And in that quest, you come up with the seeds that started the form. So we call that the grammatical action of the effect has been metonymy. Metonymy means if I have a bunch of people making videos, Buzz Kostin, somebody else, and you, I'll say, see those videos? That's a Roxy. It has a certain style. So metonymy is when you substitute a word for an object, one metaphor word for another. So artists take what's given and they change it. they put the object in a new ground. And that's the action of metonymy. All right? So I expect a Roxy video from you, not a Buzz Kosin video. Right? That word, Buzz Kosin, refers to the action of the metonymy. So that's what that means. That's the art form status. So people, they make their millions selling their art, and they're quite excited about having arrived so that they can be put in museums. But there's another phase. When the people know about the art, they don't go to the museums, they don't know anything about the Andy Warhol, but they know the soup can. They've seen the soup can somewhere, and they might even know it's Warhol. That's when the environment has become archetypal. Everybody can see something in it. Everybody can think it's part of their cultural legacy. So it is quite universal, quite comprehensive what it contains. So I have here the four parts of the quadrivium: music, geometry, astronomy, and arithmetic. And they make up the universal action of an archetype. You can do a musical version of it, a geometry version, astronomy, or arithmetic version. Musical, geometrical, astronomical, and arithmetical. You can even make a tetrad out of the four phases. So, all this stuff, the last word phase, the cliche phase, and the art form phase, all happens simultaneous in the archetypal phase. So when McLuhan says a tetrad, its four phases are all happening at the same time, he's talking what I'll call archetypal. Now the other aspect of this is that you get the first three phases of the... Okay, you want to say something?
Just the four phases that is in your model. Like,
yes.
We see three and one is behind.
Very good. And the one behind is what it flips into. It's the opposite. Probably doesn't even look like a face.
Yes, and I think it's like you're the only one who can get all these different expansions of the meaning of these archetypes.
Yes. So I take the trivium, the last word is rhetoric, cliche is dialectic, and art form is grammar.
Bert, this is what you wanted me to talk about, that four phases, right? Before, you brought this up in passing that we'd get to it, but it's right here.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, it is.
So I want to see if I get to love, though.
And you push that process to extreme, it flips into its opposite. And the opposite of the trivium is the quadrivium. It flips into music, geometry, arithmetic, and astronomy. So that whole action is different from the last word purpose, the cliche purpose, and the art form purpose. So I've made a tetrad out of the trivium flipping into the quadrivium. And it also shows these four phases, the last word, the cliche, the art form, the archetype. And it's a nice little pattern. I don't think it'll stop the dead children trade in Mexico. I don't think this will offer enough insight so that they'll arrest the people selling body parts in South America, Africa, and Canada. So we're stuck here with an abstract pattern that I evoked while sitting around pondering the old McLuhan meme. Right? That's what I did. I made up some stuff.
Yes, they're not just giving quotes.
Right. I can do that.
Yes, I know, but you have extracted the juice.
I make new patterns. So when one says McLuhan is reported to have said that art is anything you can get away with, I don't think McLuhan said that, because if he's going to talk about art, he's going to talk about these four phases: last word, cliche, art form, and archetype. He's going to break it down into more subtle shifts, not just some vague statement, art is anything you can get away with. No, art is the third phase after the last word and the cliche action. And it flips into archetype. Hmm. So at the top I have said the four phases an environment goes through have the qualities of the postures of the trivium and the quadrivium. So I think, unless you have some questions, I don't know anything more to say. I've explained it.
Well, I find it so fascinating that the archetype of this character with the different faces.
Yeah.
It's not only like a decoration, but it really evokes so much.
It's not just a it's the fourfold. The fourness is so important in many cultures. Four directions, the four winds.
Yes, in Toltec culture, they thought you have to repeat a ritual four times for the thing to manifest.
Wow. And McLuhan, he said we only had four senses, not five senses. We had four senses. Eye, ear, nose, and mouth are one. Smell and taste go together as one. And then movement, kinetic.
And I think it actually should be only one synesthesia thing.
That's tactility. That's the interplay of the senses. That's the synesthesia of tactility. That would be the one form. But it's not a form. It's a process. It's an action of integrating all the different parts to make something coherent. Which is what your mind does all the time. Your mind's always taking data and putting it in order.
Yes, this idea that we see, we smell, and we do everything at the same time. So we cannot...
And then you bring in the non-physical. That's part of the process too. Not just your four or five senses. Your non-physical is communicating and organizing and relating it to other things. Probably to other timings, to the so-called past, present, and future.
Yes,
I think.
Yes. Please turn to one side and then to the other side.
Okay.
Right.
So I don't seem to say the love thing there. Cisco, it's before that, right, Bert?
Yes, it's boy, it's like I said, I didn't get to take the notes as far as the detail where it was, but it's, I can't say where it is, Bob.
Okay, I'm just going to jump around to what we come to.
Yeah.
So the medias have really a big effect in
when they this
interaction
in.
Between the sexes and what we call love and there. That's why it is so important to understand what you're saying, because it's not anymore about thinking of us only as a physical individual, and I think Ion is trying to expressed us when he said love is a frequency.
Yeah.
And that's why we are so affected by all these different media. And now, like here in Berlin, it's not a big deal to go to a sex party and let yourself be filmed. or to send pictures naked to your boyfriend or videos or whatever. It's just like...
So when... Now, another thing Zappa said, he said that radio is new life. Very amazing, McLuhan's statement. Radio is new life. So when kids heard music on radio, the frequencies of the music with the radio medium made them fall in love with the performers. And it was a confused love, but they were expressing the gratitude of a whole new feeling, of a whole new sense of life. A whole new bunch of frequencies that was coming through the popular culture, through the pop music. It's very powerful.
That's why McLuhan said it was the highest decibels of human consciousness at that point.
Yes, it's like I talked with the mother of my ex-husband, and she said when she saw Hitler, it was amazing how the people in this mass will get so excited. Like she said, you could not control it. It was like a football game that somehow the amplified voice they had mics before they didn't caused something, and like all these groupies shouting in the concert, they will not listen to the music. They were just hysterical.
Yeah, so McLuhan would say, look how powerful these forces are, these new toys, radio and television. We don't recognize their powerful new frequencies, and we should control them more. That's how you might create morality or a more civilized society, is that you must not have these media disinflicted on whole populations of all ages and just let it run amok. And nobody thought of media that way, unless you were the Amish. What they went off and stayed in the country. And some religions, you know, don't allow you to go to dances and stuff like that back in the 20s and 30s. So, you know, McLuhan was helping people with their morality. He said, your moral issues are getting all confused. He says, first of all, if we keep having this electronic environment, you're not going to be able to have ethics in your daily business. Every politician will have a conflict of interest because you're engaging beyond your national boundaries with these environments and traded objects and commodities coming from all over the place inside a fused environment. See, people have to realize the most utopian fantasies of getting together were realized by the 60s technologically. The fusion. There's some people like to say that global village doesn't happen until the internet. That the global village did not really happen in television. Well, yes, the shipping was slower, the phone calls were slower, but still everybody could experience the television environment as crude as it was, and that's unity enough. Once you arrive at that point, you are fused, and the content may be far away and all that, but you're fused with the effect of the mesh of the medium, the form of it.
We call love. And right. That Zappa was trying to express that it's not about the things you hear in these songs.
Right.
But it's something different that is it has to do with the frequency.
You can look at art. Or maybe all media fall into the category of love. But art tries to show things in people's lives, the environment or the conflicts or the interaction, the psychology, the sociology, all the things that art does is an attempt to show the love in humanity. Not emotional love, but the environmental interaction of objects which love us and we love them back.
The force field and
the force field.
Right. I see that in the tarot picture of the world.
I seem to be getting into it there, Bert. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yes, Bob.
The objects have love for us, as we have love for the objects. So I'll just continue a bit more here, see what this leads to.
They are like coming out of a portal, the force field.
Yeah.
And also in the cathedrals, you have also these glass windows, the circular ones, like a big flower. Those are all representations of these force fields.
Right.
The rings. and that's the... Like, have to achieve this frequency to go through that force field or that portal.
And when people fall in love, they fall through a portal. They fall into a frequency with somebody, and so the action of technology, which is to create a new frequency, is the action of love. But then social language, social rules come into that and cause confusion. But apparently we like that confusion. because that creates contrast, which then we have to be creative in getting around that contrast. So the noise that comes from social mortar is part of love also. That's why Ion says there's no negative. No negative. Nothing's negative. Not even dying is negative. It's not. Not even dying is negative. Is that how you say it?
So, does that prompt you to say anything, Bert?
I think it's when you go on a little further is when you came up and said all technologies. I believe it's probably the next 3 minutes, maybe.
Okay. All right.
Too many negatives. Double negative. Dying is not negative. But we do have new information from Ion, who's saying that dying is a problem now because the gap has emptied, and you can't go to the regular death zone.
To take a break.
What?
You can't right. take that break anymore.
Yeah, you can't take that break. That's right. That's complex. So Zappa was the coolest lover. Zappa was a lover who loved. He knew that love was a force field. He knew that the social rules about expression of love were erroneous and limited. Maybe he didn't have enough appreciation of the necessity of bad rules and bad contrasts and stupid people. He didn't understand that we need stupid people to create contrast, to create, so you can be creative with it. But then I sometimes think he did. But when you use words, you're going to get put into an angle, an abstract position, a point of view.
Yes, and at so the end, I suppose ascended ones, like enlightened ones, like hermits or saints, they're all single because they don't need to look for some validation, or it's like you can be happy on your own and you don't need to engage into these weird things, relationships and dependencies.
Right. Yeah, that's, I think the future test on the saints who are ascended and alone is they're going to be forced to relate to people because everybody else is ascended. And then what happens then when ascended people can engage in social mortar without the validation issues that were there before? I rest you. I leave you with that question.
You tell us how it is.
Yeah. I live that way. I know this place.
Oh, you go okay. eat I some you. Ice cream, you go to the beach.
Ice cream and beach. And whoever I meet on the way.
Some popcorn.
What?
Some popcorn.
Popcorn. But whoever I meet along the way is my lover.
You just ride, you ride the wave.
Right. You know what I just said?
Doesn't matter the size. You just
right.
go.
Yeah, right. Whoever I meet along the way to the beach, whoever I meet along the way is my lover for the day.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean that you have to engage the chemical body. It's basically, to come back to my point, is I'll pay attention to the person that enters my reality. Paying attention is how you love. And I look at everybody I walk along the pathway. I make an effort to make eye contact. And most of them don't make eye contact. They're not paying attention to who's coming into their space. They're not lovers. They've got some crazy purpose to go.
They're looking at their cell phones.
Yes. And I'm offering myself up every day to engage attention. I'm a lover who loves.
Okay. I'm going to be creative. I'm going to invent something. Here we go. I see that Howard Gossage, the ad man who first
Yeah, then we go into that whole archetype, last word, cliche, art form archetype. So I didn't say it, did I, Bert?
No, but Bob, what I'll do is next week I'll make it a project myself to go back and transcribe it, and I'll post it. I'll
that
post
part.
It with the timing. Yes, that part. I'll go back and look for it. Vimeo's pretty sensitive, so I'm not able to do that real quick, so I'll make it a point to do it in my off time, not at work, because it's hard to go back and Vimeo and retranscribe because it's really more sensitive than YouTube or MP3.
What do you mean more tape. Sensitive?
To go back and try to replay it, it's really not that easy to do it in Vimeo.
Oh.
But I'll make it a point to go back and transcribe what I heard. And
okay,
actually make it
what
over
I was
where
saying there. I was saying that real love is paying attention. That was my
yeah.
basic point there. So whoever I engage my attention to is the love interaction, is the force field. It doesn't mean you're making out with them. You're interacting and paying attention to their essence and vibration, and you're responding to them. If more people paid attention to people like that, then you might have a more loving world.
Yeah.
It's not a thought process. You're just sort of responding. I like Awareness once said that responsibility, the ability to respond, that's what attention is.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So when I pass by people on the walkway, I pretty well look at everyone in the eye to see if they're going to respond. But then, as you know, if they're a regular and I have to do it every day, that's no good. I can't respond. I don't want to have the same lover every day. Hey, it gets boring. Like there are several people I'm now getting to nod relationship, nodding
yeah.
on the way home from
yes.
the beach. And they're cool. They're not setting up a thing where we have to acknowledge each other. They just nod, which is fine. You laugh, Carolyn? Yeah, a little tilt, a little wink. Sometimes I'll put my thumb up.
It's like a 10-degree nod of the head.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Right.
It is.
And don't know when it'll go any further. You know, yeah, I guess, is it a question? I don't know if they're thinking about it.
Mm.
I don't know if they have any of these self-conscious musings about how much they should engage attention-wise.
Is it nonverbal phatic communication?
Yeah, phatic nods. Yes, nonverbal. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, basically nodding. No words are said. And there's a few of them that are regular. And we always pass. They're coming home at the same time as I am. So I'm pretty regular when I go to the beach. So it's always the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I made up this whole theory that love was that kind of the mundane reality attention. Don't know if that would fly with many people. But something about technologies, as you're saying, is what the other part is. Well, I
right.
said there.
I'll find that.
Technologies create new frequencies.
Yes. Yes.
So, anybody else there want to say anything before we go on to the next hour of recording? Here's Ben. Did Ben want to say anything? Or Madeline? Madeline, you had a question. You want to know what book author I was reading? Did I put that on the chat?
Not anymore.
Did I say it?
I noticed in that recording you said that I may have heard it wrong. Why did you say you don't think the people trafficking the kids are going to be arrested?
Yeah, the people trafficking kids, why they're not going to get arrested. Well, they don't get caught. But I don't know if that's the point I was making.
No, but you said it.
Yeah, they're not going to get arrested.
Yeah, they are being arrested.
Oh, they are?
All over the place.
But they don't report it.
Right, they do, but you have to look for it.
Yeah, they don't want to make it headlines.
Absolutely not.
So because it would then infringe on the guys who own newspapers too much, if you get in the media and the people start worrying about it, then it gets too close to the ones.
Yeah, it touches everybody who controls the media. And
right.
Even if it didn't, it's not part of the reason that they're being arrested is because of the fucking massive cleanup that's going on. And
right.
That's not the narrative they're trying to push.
So if that cleanup wasn't happening, I'd be right. But there's a change,
right.
A cleanup happening now.
Yes, there is.
Well, I'm sure I'm very involved in it. But I'm not giving it my attention. I'll let the other me's do it. Wouldn't you like to be like that, Madeline? Let your other Madelines do everything while you enjoy the environment you're in. So, yeah, what I did play there, these new technologies create new emotions, just girls responding to the Beatles, and that is what people have to adjust to. Radio is new life. They got new frequencies they must emote with. So people are not sure where to distribute their emotions through their four or five bodies. That's probably why the young kids can't commit. They say that millennials, they won't commit to relationships or something. You heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah, they won't commit, so they are hedging their bets. There's too many possibilities.
They won't even commit to nodding or looking a person in the eye on the boardwalk.
Yes.
Have you noticed that?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, anybody 20 to mid-30s will not engage.
Yes.
Maybe they're people from other worlds that aren't seeing us.
It's an age group thing, though.
I know. They all look young. They all come young. They're ascended people who've arrived at some young state and are staying there for a good long spasm.
Well, they're very boring.
That's right. Yeah. Carolyn wants acknowledgement. Carolyn wants love directed at her. She wants attention.
No, I want to give them love, and they won't accept it.
What makes you think that your love is worth their attention?
I've been told.
Oh.
You're talking to the force field of all force fields there, Bob. Hello? Jeez.
But you know, Gene, that is, Carolyn's observation is accurate because I'm on the public transportation for maybe maximum 2 hours a day, 1 hour in and 1 hour out. And, you know, in the Switzerland, if you're sitting in a seat and there's a free seat, it's proper to say, is this seat free? And rarely do you get asked like that by young people. They just sit down, don't say good morning or nothing. They just sit, whereas the older people, meaning over 35, had a tendency to say, you know, good morning, thank you, because they ask you and you have to say yes and they sit. But the younger generation, they just, you know, but I sometimes, just to be irritant, when they sit beside me, I say good morning to them just to snap them out of their matrix bubble. But it is very accurate. But it's just, it's quite interesting how that, what Bob said earlier, that the technologies are changing the frequency. It's really a phenomena, because I'm on public transportation all the time, to see that effect of everyone with a crouched, you know, a bent neck looking into their